Welcome to the 129th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Welcome. I am training for the Chattanooga Ironman, September 24th. It's going well. It's hot here in Florida. Swim, bike, and run, weightlift every day, something. And through plant-based nutrition, I've managed to stay healthy. Going to knock on wood anyway. And managed to train every day and get something in. And things are going well. And I'm starting to feel like I'm almost ready and ready to get this race going. So that's all good. Today, I'd like to hit on a couple things that have been happening around my office and happening around the website. And I think maybe it will help some of you as well. And the first thing has to do with finicky eaters. Last week with Tim Marie, we talked about, you know, the picky eaters and we talked about traveling actually last week. But in the past, we've talked about finicky eaters. And I have two ends of the spectrums to talk about today. First is the finicky child eater that's kind of throwing a wrench in the parent's plant-based nutrition regimen. And then the second is the adult who's a picky eater and trying to get healthy. And how do those two connect? Well, it's actually very, very interesting. Typically, as a consultative cardiologist, I get people to my office with high blood pressure and heart disease and diabetes, and they're overweight and they have joint pains. And when I talk to them about nutrition, some of them are actually very picky eaters and some of them just don't like vegetables at all. We can usually come up with a few that they like, and I can kind of tell how picky somebody is. If they say that they like, when I ask them what vegetables they like and they kind of pick corn and potatoes as the first one, I know that I'm kind of in trouble when they're going to be a pretty limited, you know, it could be corn, peas, carrots, that kind of things. But, you know, nevertheless, we try to start where people are and work through it. And a lot of times they've just never been exposed to vegetables. And I had one patient in my nutrition class that she was exposed to. It was amazing when we went shopping and together that she had not tasted a variety of very common vegetables, you know, cabbage and broccoli and all kinds of crazy things that you would think that it'd be hard to avoid as you become an adult. But she hadn't. And she's not the only one. And sometimes when I have adults that are very narrow eaters, I ask them, you know, how did you grow up? You know, what were you exposed to? What was it like in your house? And oftentimes, you know, they go back and they say, well, their mother wasn't a very good cook and they can't really remember eating a whole lot of vegetables in the house. And it was always mushy, or there were, you know, the Campbell's soup dumped on everything, vegetables, and it just wasn't very good. Or they ate out a lot. They ate fast foods. But the bottom line is they kind of blame their mother, you know, for the way she cooked or didn't cook. And turn the clock back, and when I talk to parents that are having trouble becoming plant-based because their kids are picky eaters, they're worried about feeding their children and that they're not going to eat if they make them eat vegetables and make them eat fruit. And they're afraid that they'll go to bed hungry. And they're not worried about the nutrients as much as they're worried about getting calories into their children. And ironically enough, most of those children aren't really skinny. They're actually overweight or upper limits of normal. So, you know, how do we go from one extreme where the parent is afraid, you know, not to please the child and wants to give them the junk food? And then lo and behold, once they're an adult, they look back and they say, wow, you know, my narrow taste buds are because of my mother. So, you know, as a mother, it's kind of, you know, for lack of a better word, damned if you do and damned if you don't. You either make the kid happy and they're live a junk food junk diet and they grow up to be unhealthy, and then the kid's unhappy again as an adult because they're overweight and sick and unhealthy. So what's a parent to do? Well, you know, my solution is the same on both ends. Once you're an adult, you know, it's like, okay, it's too late to blame your mother. You got to stand up and go forward. And most of them actually do. It's because they're actually trying to become plant-based. So, you know, we start from where they are and expand their palates. And it's kind of great fun to actually be the one to introduce them to new vegetables and taste. But to all those people out there that have children that don't want to be vegan and don't want to be plant-based and don't want to eat vegetables and don't want to eat fruit, and it's a constant battle at the table, I'm going to tell you and give you a little suggestion that maybe you should start adding some tough love into the equation. Because the reality of it is that your 6-year-old, your 10-year-old, your 16-year-old, your 19-year-old, it's not a nutrition expert. They have no educational background when it comes to what they need. So to let them dictate what you fix them is just really kind of absurd. And really, they get their taste buds from peers and TV. You know, they watch the television and they see the Big Macs with the Happy Meals and the Burger Kings and the Chick-fil-A's and the pizza, and everybody smiling and eating the Pringles and the Fritos. That's where they get their nutritional education. And then they get it from their friends, you know, what they're eating as snack food, because again, we have these, you know, everything is the sports. It's not a pickup game. You know, when I was small, we would go outside and friends would get together and we'd form our own pickup games, whether it was softball or kickball or football. And we'd play by ourselves. And there was not really much in the way of organized sports until we got to be teenagers. And then it was pretty limited to baseball and softball where I grew up. But it wasn't, there wasn't any food centered around that. You went and you played the ball game and you went home and you ate dinner at home. But now kids don't have these pickup games. It's all organized sports. And it's also organized food where there's a mother that has to bring snacks. So not only does a kid get its bad information from the TV, they're also getting it from, you know, well, when we play sports, we get snack food and we get junk food. And so playing sports is synonymous with hot dogs and hamburgers and quick fast foods and honey buns and quick sugary drinks. And so again, we're, you know, getting these kids' taste buds all messed up. And that continues to go through grade school and middle school and high school. And then, of course, you know, once kids can drive and they can go get their own, it continues. So we're really teaching kids a really bad habit. And so when you play into this in your own home, it's actually, you know, really, really setting the kids up for disaster. So my suggestion is to look at your food and the health of your family rather than the feelings of your family. And, you know, we're going to talk a little bit later about depression and how you eat. But certainly we know that kids actually, in 1980, they did a study in Boston, and the IQ of vegetarian children were considerably, all around, considerably above average. And actually, the average IQ was 116. Now, they couldn't really prove that this was because of the vegetarian diet, but obviously, a vegetarian or vegan diet didn't cause kids to be dumb. So you don't have to worry about kids not mentally developing right. And actually, you know, the kids that are raised vegans on fruit, vegetables, and whole grain, they tend to be slimmer and healthier and less infections. And if they have less infections, they miss less school, and they have a better chance to learn and interact and develop their muscles. There's also association with gut microbes and eating fiber. So kids that get fruits and vegetables get fiber so that they're going to have better gut bacteria. They're going to be less likely to become diabetic, less likely to have acne if they when they go through puberty. And actually, the age of puberty is increased when you get rid of animal protein, especially dairy. So with girls, the age of puberty is increased, so it's associated with a decreased risk of breast cancer. Now, very young children are developing, and they do benefit for probably more fat in their diet. But you can get this from nut butters, avocados, soybean, and there's actually a very, very good reference on the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine site that goes through guidelines from really early eating through grade school on and different sample meals that you can feed your kids. So I encourage you to check this out. But, you know, kids get plenty of calcium from beans and figs, dried figs and sweet potatoes, you know, greens and fortified nut milk and soy milk. Green leafy vegetables have a great source of iron, vitamin C, potatoes, tomato sauce. So these are all really good things for kids to have. Unfortunately, school lunches are notoriously poor. They even count ketchup as a vegetable. So, you know, you have to take responsibility at home. You know, and there's some other studies that look that, you know, if you sit down at the table and the cell phones are away and you actually get to look at each other and eat dinner, it shows that you actually care about your kid and that you're interested in how their day went and interact with them. And I got to tell you that means a lot down the road. You know, I have had some interaction with people that were workaholics, and they you know, relate how their kids as teenagers and early adults have nothing to do with them. And they also related that they were never there at dinner time. They got home late. They went to bed when the kids, went to work when the kids were still sleeping and came home after the kids were in bed. That leads to a real poor relationship over time. So it's a great time to prepare meals together, to sit down at the table. And you don't have to say, you know, this is a vegan meal or a plant-based meal, but, you know, making sure that you have fruits and vegetables on the table is very important. And again, those kids are going to eat sweet potatoes and they're going to eat fruits. They're going to eat white potatoes, little burritos with beans and rice and avocado. So there's plenty of things that you can make for kids, you know, butternut squash, cheese sauce over rice can be a very good meal for kids. And putting the butternut cheese sauce over greens or mixing it in, they don't even taste the greens. They taste this great butternut squash cheese sauce. So there's lots of things that you can make really quick and have ready for your kids. You know, sunflower seeds are a great source of protein, a great source of calcium, a good source of fat. And you can take sunflower seeds and soak them and then add ingredients such as some barbecue sauce and relish and mustard and make like a sloppy joe, which you can put in a pita for a lunch. You can make it more like tuna with some relish and mustard and some dulce flakes. So there's a whole lot you can do for kids to make things healthy and introduce nutritious food. The other thing is cutting things up very, very small. So every bite has a little bit of everything in it, as opposed to, you know, one big thing or the other. So, you know, keep working, but don't feel guilty that, you know, your child's not getting enough food if they're picky. They'll come around. And certainly if they're older, you're buying the food, you know, you need to, again, set these kids up and set these young adults up for healthy environments. When they go off to college and they get into the junk food and they gain the 20, 30 pounds and the acne gets bad and they, you know, they're not exercising, it's a setup for disaster. But if you teach kids and teenagers how to eat well, they will perform well athletically. They'll perform well in school, and your life will be a whole lot better overall. Moving into iron and athletic performance, I was approached, and there was a little discussion today at the swimming pool. As I've alluded to over the last couple of weeks, I've been swimming with a new master swim program, and there's been a few jokes here and there about, you know, me eating plants and swimming and my swimming getting better, and I must be eating kale before I come to swim practice. Well, lo and behold, some of the people on the swim team are interested in eating vegan diets because they're just finding they're not recovering and they're not having the energy and they're sluggish and their food is not digesting as well when they're trying to exercise in the heat. And the discussion came up, well, what about iron and athletes? Athletes need iron to perform better? You know, there is an associated iron deficiency because when you're pounding, doing marathons or endurance running, or ultras, you can actually lose a little iron through your feet. Of course, the menstruation in women, you can become anemic. So if you're anemic, you don't have enough, you potentially don't have enough oxygen on your hemoglobin molecules. or your oxygen carrying capacity, because your hemoglobin molecules carry your oxygen around. So if you have lower amount of hemoglobin molecules, then you can't get as much oxygen to your tissues. But the simple answer is that Gorilla is a pretty strong athlete, and he doesn't need to eat red meat to be that way. There was a great article published by Dr. Joel Furman in 2010, and I'll leave the reference to that article. It's in the Current Sports Medical Review in 2010. But basically, you know, looking at fueling for the athlete, and the biggest thing that you want to do is to be able to recover. And the inflammation and oxidative damage that occurs with heavy exercise is best treated with antioxidants and phytochemicals. And those are in plants, fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds. Animals don't have that. When you're exercising and training very hard, you actually suppress your immune function. And so oftentimes before marathons or triathlons, people get more colds and upper respiratory tract infections. And that, again, is because of decreased immunity. When you're cold, when you get a cold, it's obvious that you know, your training suffers. You have to take days off, or you're not training to the ability that you can. It kind of puts you at some risk. It certainly, you don't want to be sick on race day. And we know that excessive fat intake also exacerbates this exercise-induced immunosuppression. So you just don't eat red meat and get protein and iron from it. You're getting fat, so you're actually contributing to your immunosuppression. I'm not going to take that beep out. I just finished making my bars for my long ride on Sunday with oats, sunflower seeds, walnuts, peanuts, maple syrup, dates, raisins, some cacao nibs. So they're going to be excellent and a great source of antioxidants and phytonutrients. I even put some matcha green tea leaves in there. So I expect to ride well on Sunday. But anyway, I digress. By decreasing, you know, your fat intake, you're going to improve your immunofunction. You know, things that are green and orange enhance your immune function. Animal products have omega-6, which are associated with chronic inflammation. You want omega-3s in the form of chia seeds, flax seeds, hemp seeds, sesame seeds, sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds. They're a substantial source of protein. They have folic acid, lignans, and sterols that, you know, support your immune function. So that's where you want to, you know, you want to be as nutrient dense as you possibly can athletically, and you're going to get plenty of iron in again, green leafy vegetables and beans. Taking antioxidants in the form of supplements, although it's on every other page of running and triathlon magazines, have never been shown to decrease your inflammatory markers. They've never been shown to decrease other markers of oxidative stress, and they actually might even slow your recoveries. And when they looked at your creatine kinase, which is a muscle breakdown associated with vigorous exercise, there was it actually stayed the levels stayed elevated longer, those people given supplements versus those people taking in fruits and vegetables. If you want to take it back as far as, you know, proving a point with athletic performance, in 1912, the first man to ever complete a marathon in less than 2 hours and 30 minutes was a vegetarian. So if you're worried about running a marathon on vegetables, don't be. In 1970, there was a study done looking at thigh muscle width and pulmonary function. It was no different, no worse than those people eating a vegetarian diet. You know, think about calcium for your bones and protein. Nuts and seeds are excellent source there. And when you look at iron from a vegetable source or iron from an animal source or heme or blood iron, you know, we can talk a little bit about that. But they're actually, there's more, vegans actually absorb more iron from their diets than omnivores do from their meat intake. Even though that non-heme or plant iron only has a 10% absorption versus 18% in heme iron, it's related to your iron stores. So when your iron stores go low, your absorption of non-heme iron or plant iron actually goes up more so than blood or heme iron. And so it's very protective. Your body knows when it needs more iron and absorbs more from the food, as opposed when you are exposing it to heme iron all the time. You absorb it at the same rate, and you also store it, and it's very much an inflammatory mark. You know, it causes a lot of inflammation. It's associated with increased cardiac events, increased cancer. So, you know, having excessive amounts of iron does not do the body good, especially when it comes from a heme source. There are some people say that, you know, the phytates in beans and grains will decrease your iron absorption. But the reality of it is, if you're increasing if you take in vitamin C, which comes from potatoes and peppers and tomatoes and fruits, you increase the absorption of of iron. So, you know, in studies looking at iron deficiency in athletes have not shown vegans and vegetarians to be, you know, iron deficient. Now, certainly if you're eating, you know, French fries, milkshakes, Oreos, and, you know, box cereals, and you're an athlete, there's a risk. But the reality of it is, if you're eating a diet fresh with fresh fruits and vegetables, you're going to do just fine. And again, the green leafy vegetables, rich in iron, rich in nitric oxide producing arginine. 1 pound of kale actually has 8 milligrams of iron. Other good sources, spinach, asparagus, Swiss chard, broccoli, bok choy, tofu, lentils, pumpkin seeds, sesame seeds, soybean, all great sources of iron. If you want to increase your athletic performance, increase your omega-3 fatty acid intake, you can get that again, flax seeds, hemp seeds, chia seeds, walnuts, pumpkin seeds. Do you see me kind of repeating myself here? These nuts and seeds are really good for you all the way around. So, you know, don't be afraid of being plant-based on a vegetarian diet. And the thing that I haven't mentioned yet is the, you know, nitric oxide production with greens that dilate your blood vessels and you get more blood flow to your body, as opposed to taking in the oils where you get vasoconstriction up to 6 hours. So, you know, I think if you want if you want to get increased athletic performance, maybe I shouldn't tell people this that are getting ready to compete in Chattanooga, but you really need to ditch the animal proteins. You know, head for the plants and fruits and vegetables. And nothing makes me feel better than to have fruit after a workout, you know, with all the phytonutrients and antioxidants. And I'll do a smoothie after my runs. And it's, again, a great source of hydration and nutrients. And it's something I really look forward to. And it's, you know, actually very satisfying. One of my Humane Society registered dietitian friends asked me to talk a little bit about a article on depression in vegetarian diets. There was a recent article out of the UK in the Journal of Affective Disorders, Vegetarian Diets and Depressive Symptoms Among Men. And this was a study where they did questionnaires on the fathers, and they had them, rate certain data, which was an Edinburgh postnatal depression scale, and they had them fill out things, and they concluded that vegetarians had a higher depression scores on average than non-vegetarian. And the confidence interval was 0.53 to 1.4. So what that really means is that it was kind of spread across the board, and it's certainly not a very powerful study. And the reality of it is that, you know, again, it was not a randomized trial by any means. It was just a questionnaire type of trial, but it's got a lot of, you know, anytime there's, you know, something negative about a vegan diet, they, you know, everybody goes crazy to be able to kind of you know, publicize it. And what they looked at was, you know, people that are more depressed, this is going to surprise you, but they have a lower socioeconomic status. They had more kids at home. They rented instead of owned it. They were smokers. They were unemployed. So, you know, basically they had a whole lot more stressors than people that weren't depressed. And even the people that they sampled that claimed to be vegan, 72% of them had claimed eating red meat once in a while. So that kind of throws things off. But they questioned whether, you know, that the people eating a vegetarian or vegan diet had low B12 and low folic acid levels. And that's what led to causing some of the depression. And it was, you know, their poor diet. And there wasn't much in the way of, you know, a dietary questionnaire. And, you know, I have to infer from, you know, if you're a lower socioeconomic status and, you know, you're struggling and you smoke, you're probably not eating that great of a vegetarian diet. And you actually might be eating a junk food diet. So, you know, I don't see how that really is relevant when you start again blaming a vegan or vegetarian diet. It's like going back to saying that, you know, vegans are iron deficient because they eat Oreos all day long. And in fact, the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, you know, have cited several articles that actually eating a plant-based diet helps fight depression and increase overall mood and productivity. And there was actually a meta-analysis in 2014 that, you know, showed a decrease in depression in people that are on a plant-based diet. There's been one randomized controlled trial that was short, that they actually took meat, fish, poultry, eggs, and in 2 weeks they saw an improvement in their mood scores. And they, you know, questioned, you know, how could this be? How could you feel so good so quick? And actually, when you get rid of all those things and you're eating fruits and vegetables, you have a lot more antioxidants. And it's been shown that simple carbohydrate diets actually improve depression over high fat diets. And certainly people that are overweight, can have more depressive symptoms. There was a long-term study after a year on a plant-based diet that people showed increased mood, increased productivity. And what this was kind of associated with was the actual, even if they didn't change the amount of fat that they were given, but they changed the kind of fat from being animal fat to plant fat, the people on the plant fat actually did better. And it was thought because of the high arachidonic acid levels that are associated with animal protein, specifically chicken and eggs, that led to the increased inflammation and depressive symptoms. There was another really large study, 22 weeks long, a Geico trial, that they started it in a small single Geico office where they just provided healthy vegan options in the cafeteria, and then they expanded to multiple location, 10 corporate sites, and they looked at those people eating more plant-based meals had improved depression, decreased anxiety, improved well-being, sense of well-being, and increased productivity. I think that, again, actually doing an intervention and improving people's diet and watch what helps goes a long way to say that, a plant-based diet actually improves cognitive function, it improves a sense of well-being, and again, eat your plants and vegetables, and I think you'll feel better. I had another question about rice that's been getting Dr. Greger posted about the arsenic in rice, and it's got everybody in an uproar what to do, because again, you know, anytime anybody attacks our beloved whole grains, we get all bumped up, you know, all in a panic. The reality of it is arsenic is in the ground table waters. It comes sometimes from the chicken poop that chickens are fed arsenic. Factory farm animals are given arsenic, and the runoff from the spraying can increase contaminate the groundwater, such as well as long exposure of previous chemicals and pesticides. The reality of it is, you know, the kind of take-home message is that if you kind of look for rice that's from California or China or India, it's healthier than rice from Texas when it comes to arsenic levels. If you cook your rice with more water, then drain the water off. You can remove a lot of the arsenic levels. You know, if you're really worried about it, you can use other grains like farro and barleys. But, you know, I really am not worried as far as other rice goes. Basmati rice tends to be a healthier rice. So, you know, mix it up. I think that probably avoiding rice flour, because even if it's organic, you're not sure about the arsenic level. So I'd probably back off on the arsenic, or back up on the rice flour, back off on rice syrup, add it to things. You know, the reality of it is that people that eat cereals are getting more of this stuff concentrated in, you know, Rice Krispies and things of that nature than a whole, you know, a whole rice. So, again, go back to the simple forms of food, you know, kind of, you know, make a point to do more California, Indian, and Chinese rice, and you'll be okay. Something that I'm not worried about. I like rice and have it several times a week, and, you know, I'm probably not going to do rice flour near as much, but otherwise, I'm good to go. I actually do my rice in an Instapot just because it's quicker. I have not tried to put more water in an Instapot yet. Probably won't do much good because it's again, bringing it up to pressure. So you'd have to probably cook it on the stove. But the other thing is you can do black rice. Black rice is more of a seed from lakes, so there's probably less arsenic in that as well. But I wouldn't get too awful bent out of shape on that. We're in class two of my nutrition series. Funny story. I'm left-handed and I love a sharp chef's knife, and I can get that left hand going pretty good cutting things. And I always, kind of worry my mother. She comes to nutrition class with me and she sees that, you know, if right-handed people watch left-handed people chop, they get kind of nervous. But in nutrition class, things aren't exactly, perfect as far as the table's much lower than I'm used to working on, and I bring in a flat cutting board as opposed to my, you know, big thick wooden cutting board. And of course I'm talking and answering questions at the same time I'm demonstrating cooking techniques. You see where this is going. And so I was we made a kale salad this week, I always chop everything up in advance for the salads, except for, you know, a couple things to demonstrate cutting. You know, I usually bring an avocado and a lemon and, you know, the different kinds of kale, and strip the kale like Ann Esselstyn. And so I was chopping the kale and talking and answer questions, and, you know, darn if I didn't catch my thumb, you know, so I had to make an exit from the room and fix my thumb up before I could continue on. So I do believe that the kale salad was vegan during the class. But anyway, I kind of chuckled afterwards. The other thing that happened, this salad head, I always try to do a new grain and a new green each week for the class. So this week was, again, kale and quinoa. We also had sunflower seeds, again, a good source of protein, calcium, B vitamins and magnesium. There's lemon, lemon juice, raisins, sweet potato, and we have cumin and cardamom and as spices, and some pepper. I used a fig balsamic vinegar. And, you know, so again, I'm throwing everything. And I also put some jicama in, so people can taste jicama. If you haven't tasted that before, you should try it. And so this is great big salad, because I want people to know that salad's just not cucumber, celery, and tomatoes and iceberg lettuce. It can be a big hearty salad with all these things in it. But I'm dishing it out, and then usually I fix the salad, and then my mom helps me, or she actually, you know, brings the salad to the people sitting around the tables. And she said, "What's in that bowl?" And I forgot to actually put the quinoa in, so we kind of had to go back and do a redo and add quinoa to the dishes. So if nothing else, you know, I tell the people in the class, it demonstrates, you know, things don't always go right in the kitchen, but that doesn't mean you don't keep going, you know. So you might cut your finger, you might forget something, you're not having an ingredient. You can always substitute. You know, I made that salad up off the top of my head because it's things that I like. You know, you could substitute apricots for raisins. You could do different kind of sweet potatoes. You could put, you know, a cooked carrot in there. There's a whole different, you know, all different ways that you could do that salad. And so the idea is just to experiment with taste and spices that you like, and you're getting a tremendous amount of nutrients. I made a big mistake last week. I was announcing my daughter, Addie Delaney Meinrich, that's joining me in the, she's going to be joining as a registered dietitian consultant for me. She's, got her accreditation, and she'll be helping me with the online, portion of, my membership practice. So she'll be available to speak with people once a month. She'll also do consultations, phone consultations with people that are local as well. Anybody that wants to speak to her as well. And, you know, she has a nice way about her. It's maybe not as blunt as I am. But it's a different approach. She also has a degree in exercise phys, so she really has a lot to contribute with the wellness aspect of the membership program. But I mispronounced her new married name, so I apologize to Nathan Meinrich and my daughter Addie Delaney Meinrich for mispronouncing their last name. We always tease because the way the last name is spelled and the mnemonics about, you know, how you actually say it and how it's spelled and, you know, how people mispronounce it. And I went down the wrong road because I say it the wrong way, teasing too much. So I apologize profusely to Addie and the Meinrich family. And again, I'm so excited to have her working with me to help do nutrition and exercise counseling. And I can't wait, you know, if anybody wants to join up for our online classes, please see, go to drdelaney.com. And, you know, we have an online version that's all web material, the level one, webinars, letters, and Facebook page. And then we have an online two, where again, once a month she'll speak with you and once a month I'll speak with you, and we can all work together to help you achieve your optimal health wherever you are, and can answer all your questions and provide social support and give you a lot of feedback. So I think it's an excellent opportunity to have a plant-based doctor and registered dietitian on your side. You know, there are not very many programs that support having a dietitian. Most, unless you have diabetes, you can have a couple visits a year, or kidney failure, a couple visits a year. But it's just not something that's supported through traditional insurance or Medicare. But the way we've set up the membership practice, you know, it's we can make it available all year long. So I think it's an excellent way to really achieve your optimal healthcare goals. So visit the website, drdelaney.com, and look at everything there. And feel free to email me at jamiedelaney@gmail.com. It's jamiedulaney@gmail.com or jamie@drdelaney.com. That all works. Love to hear from you. Keep the emails coming with your questions. This podcast is going to always be free to everybody. You know, there's no gimmicks to it. We're not pushing any vitamins or any kind of, you know, magic dust. Just good old exercise and eat your vegetables and fruits. And, you know, I practice medicine by, I wouldn't do anything to my patients or have them do anything that I wouldn't do or my family do. And that's how I do my online programs and this podcast as well. I'm not going to, you know, suggest you do anything that I don't do. I really appreciate you taking time to listen. So until next week, eat your veggies. And I have a special guest next week. I'm going to try to get, we're going to talk about gut microbes. So don't forget to tune in. And thank you again for listening. Have a great week.